everybody. That is Jeff Mitchell's Fat Cigar you're listening to, and that means it's time for Not Just Blowing Smoke. Coming at you live from Twin Smoke Shop Studio Headquarters in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Be sure to subscribe to us on Podbean, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Spotify, iTunes, Google, wherever else you found this podcast. I am Pastor Padron. I'm here with my co-host, Nick O'Dean.
Hey-o.
And we have two guests with us tonight.
One significantly prettier than the other.
We've got
Kaz, you are so very pretty.
Walters. I was talking about me.
Walters the Warlock is back with us from DC Distribution Group, whatever the heck that is, and Tequila Talia.
2 weeks in a row,
two
baby.
2 weeks in a row. Who can complain about that? Not
I
me.
Could. I could.
Not me.
It should be every Monday. If it was my way, it'd be every Monday.
Cut me a check.
They'd have to cut me a check first.
Promote you from guest appearance to regular.
Yes. Yep.
Oh, my goodness. So, we have, an interesting show tonight. We're just coming off the PD Blinders Peterson Pipe event that we do here at Twins around St. Patrick's Day every year. And we are going to do some pipe tobaccos tonight, one of which we kind of highlighted at the event and called GLP's Navigator. And the other one we're smoking is Cornell & Diehl's Speakeasy. So it's kind of like Speakeasy versus Navigator.
Ooh,
two
competition.
Two Navy Flake blends.
Oh, yeah.
Which one is better? Or at least, which one, you know, do we like? You know, what? And, I mean, they're both really good.
I was about to say,
you can't be wrong.
How are they?
You can't go wrong with either of them.
How are they alike? True. And how are they different?
Yes. And Talia, of course, it has brought some libation.
Libation
to enjoy while we're in doing this. So, what did you bring? Some kind of spot.
That's right. So in spirit of St. Patrick's Day, we're keeping the Irish whiskey train rolling. So I brought Green Spot whiskey today, which I hear is Kaz's favorite.
Oh, indeed. Ooh. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. So that might be a little bit, you know, sucking up on my part.
Sucking up, Talia.
Oh, damn.
Oh, that's very good.
Oh, damn, that's good.
It's good to have the Warlock on your side, and this definitely gets me on your side.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about this Green Spot?
Yes. So
please and thank you, because for me, if I close my eyes and you didn't tell me it was Green Spot, I think it would be a scotch. It tastes like a scotch.
So not a peaty scotch,
no.
I would say.
Like a Highland.
So a Highland,
yes.
Scotch is what we were sort of talking about before.
Yep.
So the Green Spot whiskey has been around for a really long time. They started in the late 1800s. So this family, the Mitchell family, you'll see their name on the bottle. They still run the company. Early 1800s, they were traders, so they traded fine wines, baked goods, and around 1887, so about 120 years after Jameson,
okay. They
decided they were going to become whiskey bonders. So whiskey bonders are basically, they sourced whiskey. So they would take all of the casks from the wines they sold, so fortified wine, sherry, port. They'd send those empty casks over to the original Jameson Distillery,
yep.
Which was in Dublin. Now it's like more of a museum. They don't really distill there anymore, but you can still visit. And they would have Jameson take their single pot still whiskey, fill their barrels, and send it back to them. So their barrels would then be put in their cellar under their big warehouse, and they would age them for however long.
Yeah.
And it's called the spot whiskey, and if you see the bottle, there's a little paint swatch on it. So that's what the spot is a little paint daub.
And it happens to be green.
And so this one is green.
It happens to be green.
So the other ones are different colors. It happens to be green. So it actually works out for St. Patrick's Day this year. But the daub of paint, depending on the color, was the age.
Oh.
Okay.
So that's how they told the different age statements. So the green is 10 years. So that's what the green means.
Oh. What does the blue mean?
So the blue is 7 years, and the blue is also a cask strength.
Okay.
So if you try the blue versus the green, I mean, the blue is still flavorful and smooth, but it's not as rich and like velvety as the green spot, if
this
you will.
This is very velvety. That's a good word
velvety.
For it.
Velvety.
Mm-hmm.
I love my drinks velvety.
Yep. So they actually still do source liquid from the, so in Middleton now. So the single pot still whiskey from Middleton, but it is distilled specifically for this family. So it's not liquid used in any other whiskeys.
Okay.
Now, Kaz, you want to speak a little bit about the speakeasy that we are starting off with here?
Just I guess.
To kind of set the stage.
So
try and keep it to 2 minutes.
I don't want to anymore. No. So speakeasy was formulated in
1888.
2017.
I was close.
In geological time, probably. But
yeah.
So it was a addition to Cornell & Diehl's Cellar Series, which was a line of tobaccos designed to have long legs as far as aging. Estimated to peak around 10 to 15 years worth of age.
Really?
Yes. The Cellar Series is really cool. But I believe, yeah, this is definitely my favorite entry. It's a Virginia Flake, primarily a special, very special grade of red that head blender Jeremy Reeves sourced. It makes up a significant portion of this tobacco. And then there is the addition of a little bit of bright from Canada.
Mm.
And truly condimental additions of dark fired Kentucky. Yes. Condimental.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to use that word now.
Condimental. Anyway.
Ready?
So, condimental amounts of dark fired Kentucky, Izmir, Turkish, and Perique from St. James Parish, Louisiana. And then it is delicately kissed with a little bit of dark rum. So, in the spirit of it being primarily a Virginia, with the application of some rum, it does satisfy the requirements for the tobacco to be called a Navy Flake. That being said, if you smoke other tobaccos marketed as such, you will notice a distinction with Speakeasy. It is definitely more Virginia forward than rum forward.
Yeah.
It just brings this slight, it actually accentuates the molasses and slightly malty notes that are already present in the tobacco.
Right. It kind of brings out the sweetness that's already there.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are probably a lot of guys who smoke pipes that have really good palates that if you didn't tell them there was rum applied to this, they may not point it out. They may have associated those extra characteristics with the Virginia.
No.
The
thank you.
But, I mean, this only came out in 2017, so nobody has actually got to smoke it at the full, like, estimated peak for the Cellar Series, which, okay. As an aside,
it never makes it that long. Is that what you're saying?
Probably not.
I have,
it's really good now.
Yeah.
When it first came out in 2017, I bought like 10 tins, and I might have 3 of them left.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's damn good. I remember when this came out a couple years ago, and I bought 2 tins, and then you said after, oh, well, it's supposed to be... It's supposed to sit. It's supposed to age, Nick. In, like, nicotine fashion, I went through 2 tins in 2 weeks.
I mean, it's designed to smoke great.
It is.
I'm not surprised.
Like, it's not saying that you can't smoke it before, but it's
right.
It's supposed to, like, these blends were formulated with the idea of how they would progress aging. Like, that was actually a thought in Jeremy's, like, blending this
right.
up.
Yeah.
And I, as someone who has been smoking for over a decade, who has definitely dabbled deeply in Virginia Flakes and Navy Blends, I would bet serious coin that this is going to be just ambrosia at 10 to 15 years.
More than likely. The question is anybody out there that's going to be able to let it sit for 10 to 15 years?
Yeah.
I mean,
so far it has not been me.
Me neither.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love a good Virginia Perique is probably as much as the next guy. And this was one of the first ones when we had Mark be the rep back then. He introduced me to that on one of the shows that we had, and I was hooked.
Yeah.
That was one of the best tins that he had on the show, one of the best tins that I probably ever came across.
Mm-hmm.
It is so damn good, so spicy. You got that sweetness in there. It's really, really good.
All right, so both Kaz and Talia were here for the PD Blinders event, and we did it right here in the lounge, right where we're recording. And you know, we had a great selection of pipes.
Meh.
We had,
oh, meh.
You know, a packed. We packed out the lounge, Made the cigar people feel very uncomfortable, which I really liked and everything. But how did you guys think about the event? What did you like about it? What was your favorite thing? Or?
I loved that it was in the lounge this time.
Mm.
Yeah.
I got to roam around.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with Talia. It not only as just in general, the event being in the lounge being a lot of fun, mm-hmm. but it was really on brand, on theme for like a Peaky Blinders themed event. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. having the trunk, like it was, you had set up the pipes being in a literal like vintage trunk
mm.
in the back room, like the humidor area in the yeah. lounge. So it had a very like back room vibe of the garrison.
Yeah. Yep.
And like instead of dealing, you know, stolen guns from Northern Ireland, we had some really cool Irish pipes.
I mean, but,
well,
I probably
you don't know what was behind
I could have brought some stuff in, you know, just got to call a guy, but. Mm.
I mean, your last name is Flanagan.
It's Flanagan, yes.
Just tell people you're Black Irish.
That's it. It's Black Irish. That's it. That's yep. it, man.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
It was a good
very,
time,
It was
though.
A very good event. And, of course, one of the things that we were wicked pumped, Kaz and I were wicked pumped about, that we had kept secret. Nobody knew about it. We announced that Peterson was going to be making a club pipe.
Oh,
and we would be ordering 50 pipes. We had a particular shape that we'd picked out.
The 221.
The 221. But we let everybody in the club put in their votes for the color, the finish, the accents, the stem.
Oh, yeah. It's totally a byproduct of a democratic process by the club.
And it was a very, very quick democratic process.
I have never seen a club come to an agreement that fast.
Very quickly. I had barely walked out of the room.
How many choices did they have or did you guys have or come up with?
There were like four.
As far as like the shape and the bowl.
So the shape was set.
Okay.
But as far as the finish being smooth, sandblasted, or rusticated, you had three finish choices.
Yep.
There were four or five stain options.
Okay.
Depending on the finish and that the further you get in the details, the more variables you get. Because, like, you can do this finish with this stain, but then you can do, so you know it starts to exponentially get more broad.
Yeah.
But they kept, like, it was almost
a
funnel.
Yeah.
They went straight to it. Instead of, they had the choice of no band, nickel band, or sterling silver band.
Which was? What did they choose?
Well, I'll get to that.
Come on, let me know.
Calm down.
Killing me, Smalls.
You're
look, the podcast isn't a ten of speakeasy. Just wait a minute.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And then there was the options of stem material color. So your traditional black stems,
yep.
A Cumberland acrylic, which if you're not familiar, is a red and black mottled, almost marble pattern material.
Yep.
And then a amber model, a mottled amber yellow colored stem.
Interesting.
And the club decided on a smooth finish with a medium brown stain, sterling silver band, and that amber stem material. So it's going to be a swank pipe.
Yeah, there's nothing quite looking like it
in the current catalog.
In the current catalog.
Yeah.
So, and each pipe, of course, will be numbered. It's one of 50. 25 of those pipes were spoken for before the day even ended. A couple more people have put their name on the list, too. If you're listening out there and you might like one of these pipes, give Twin Smoke Shop a call. 603-421-0242. And tell them you want to get put on the list for a pipe if there's room left. We're guessing because we were picking and choosing and switching things around, you know, I have a guesstimate of what the pipes are going to cost, but not a final amount yet. But it's going to be something like in the neighborhood of 170.
Yeah.
You know? So if that's something you want, give the store a call. It's going to be really, really good. Now, here's the thing. You know, we were thinking about, you know, different things we could do to spice up the Peaky Blinders thing this year.
I am.
And you and I kind of organically just came up, well, why don't we see about, you know, would Peterson make us pipe? And you're like, okay, I'll ask and everything. But, you know, so it kind of, it really was kind of the result of a just shooting ideas of how can we make this event special.
Yeah, that was...
From other events. But how big of a deal is it? I mean, is it a big deal? Is it not? Is it... How rare is it for a company like Peterson to make pipes like that for a group or a shop or a...
So I would love to say that they don't do it for anybody, and I strong arm them.
By order of the Petey Blinders.
And just like look golden. But truthfully, though, it's not a super common thing.
Right.
Typically... There are constraints that prevent it. Like Peterson is a very old, celebrated brand, and a lot of that isn't just the pipes being so well beloved, even though they are. It's the fact that they do care about the pipe community and pipe smokers, and so they try to be engaged in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So the most famous club pipe that they do, and they've done it for a few years, is for the Pipe Smokers of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a massive online club.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the process takes a while because, like I said, like this club came to an agreement on a design
about 10 minutes.
And even clubs of comparable size or smaller, like it's usually a debate because you have guys that get into different factions. Well, I don't want this color stem, or I want... And this club was unified. Like, it was a beautiful thing to see.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they occasionally do this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's usually a reason why it's just not a thing. Like, in order for it to work into the production schedule, there has to be a sufficient demand. Like, you can't work in five pipes.
Right.
And then post-COVID, pipe making is no different than any other industry that saw disruptions in supply chains and things like that post-COVID. So there's been a lot of hurdles to navigate, even though they will do this and they want to engage the community this way and give them something even more special.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's just, for one reason or another, it can't be done. So
right.
When I sat down with Joshua Burgess, the managing director of Peterson, it's like, look, this club's really special.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to see what we can do for them. So with the current briar availability, options, things of that nature, like, what can we do? And it was a few weeks back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, at one point he was like, we really want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But give me some more time. Okay. Like, we've got to work this out. And I'm like, yes, like, please, like... We started thinking about this early enough. It wasn't like right before.
Right, yeah.
And he called me into a meeting, what was it, about a month ago?
Yeah.
And he really, like, he delivered. He
big
said,
time.
These are the options we can do as far as bowl shapes.
Mm-hmm.
You and I had a discussion, and, like, you thought that the 221 would be the best choice, and I agree. And then from there, he was able to give us a whole list of other options to make it a unique pipe, and it wouldn't be just something that was already existing in the Peterson catalog with a different stamp on the bowl. And I think the guys are going to be happy. I think it's going to be a great pipe, and it's going to be something that's truly special, not in the sense that it was a group effort in designing, but because it is going to be a unique, objectively special piece.
Yeah. And you know what else was cool was, you know, we've been being asked to make some kind of special club thing, a hat, T-shirts, sweatshirts or something, something that we could, no one apparently had ever thought that we would consider, you know, how about a club pipe? And so they were just floored. Mm-hmm. They thought it was awesome.
You should have seen it, I swear. I'm talking about whiskey. They're all politely listening. The second they talk about the pipe, they're swarming the TV. It was like little kids, like when the cookies come out at playtime. It was crazy. Yeah.
I told Dan, I think it was yesterday, we were talking about like how, and when, because nobody in the club knew that this was a thing until it was announced at the meeting. And when Dan made that announcement and his little presentation with the different options appeared on the big screen, you could literally feel the energy shift and just the excitement. Even though, I mean, there were a few, like, exclamations of, like, jubilation, but, like, it was really just, like, you could just feel the instant shift in the lounge, and I'm like, okay, this is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very good. It was worth all that energy that we put in, and how hard it was to keep it secret.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny that I literally didn't know it was a secret. I didn't say anything, thank God.
Good thing.
But, like, I had no idea it was supposed to be a secret. I knew about it for, like, months.
Now, we always do our event around St. Patrick's Day, and that makes sense. It's an Irish company. They come out with a St. Patrick's Day pipe every year, and then Talia is usually a part of it because she's got a great selection of Irish whiskeys in her portfolio that she represents. But, you know, I thought, you know, I would ask, and this can be a topic of discussion too. I've always thought it was funny that, you know, you're celebrating basically the death anniversary of a saint, you know, who had a great reputation as a Christian missionary. And what do we do on St. Patrick's Day?
We drink.
We go out and we get rip-roaring drunk and we eat lots of meat and it's just this huge rip-roaring party. Why is St. Patrick's Day such a huge drinking day? Do you know?
And just in America, I mean, they don't do that out in Ireland.
They don't?
Really?
I mean, they
not celebrate, the way that we do.
Like no. Americans are obnoxious.
We were obnoxious.
The St. Patrick's Day Parade, that happened here first in America.
Mm-hmm. Did it really?
Yeah.
The original, so you being a member of the clergy, like, you know, I mean, I know that you're not Catholic, but, you know, every saint has all these, like, different elements associated with them, certain colors, certain iconography.
Yep.
St. Patrick's color is blue.
It's blue.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And it got turned to green for Americans because, like, the Emerald Isle and the strong Irish association. So, like, it was changed to green because of the U.S. Like,
yeah, baby.
Woo! Well, that, I think it's still officially blue.
It's still officially blue, but, you know, one of the things he was most famous for was using the clover to try and explain the Trinity. And so wearing the clover became a thing on St. Patrick's Day, and then the green of the clover became, let's wear green, let's be green, and then it became more than just St. Patrick's Day. It became a celebration of Ireland and
Irish heritage.
And Irish heritage.
All the Irish immigrants that... For a long time, the early days of coming here, they were not treated well.
No, they were not.
So you needed a sense of community and solidarity within each other because for a lot of them, that's all they had. And a lot of things we consider, though, traditional St. Patrick's Day fare, like corned beef and cabbage.
Right.
That's an American thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always wondered how corned beef can literally drop in price by about 60 to 65%. Around St. Patrick's Day, and the rest of the year, it's like you might as well go buy filet mignon or something because it's the same stinking thing. But all of a sudden now it's $2.99 a pound at the store. I mean, what the?
Because that's probably the only. So first of all, I love corned beef.
I do too.
I do as well.
It was invented as a way to preserve meat before refrigeration.
That was
corn is that in that term corned is basically synonymous with pickled, and.
Yeah, it was funny trying to explain to my dad what corned beef was the other day. I'm like, it's like beef that's brined and pickled and seasoned, like just turns
so
pink
good.
In the brine.
Mm. It's chemically cooked,
which
is why, yeah, it still retains that red color.
Yep.
But I would argue that a lot of people, excluding like the rarities like us, probably don't eat corned beef any other time of the year.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's when manufacturers, like, our processors, like, know they can move it. I mean, I'd eat it year round, but, I mean, I wouldn't be here very long
if
I did.
My whole family enjoys it. Yeah. My whole family enjoys it.
I like the hash. I hate like corned beef and cat. Anything that's boiled dinner to me, I'm just like, I can't. It just, I hate it.
I used to be like that when I was younger, but now forget it. I'll eat anything at this point.
Mm-mm. Wait, you eat it boiled, like you've had it boiled. You've never had it braised.
So the way that I make it at home is like I sear the shit out of it, and then I sear all my veggies, and then I just put a little bit of broth and or not broth, Guinness in it, not covered. Mm-hmm. So halfway, and I stick it, and I do it all in my cast iron Dutch oven, and I put that in the oven.
So you braise it, okay? Yeah, that's how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah,
but I know some people have like just
crock
boil
pots.
It. Yeah,
they just put it in a crock pot, cover it with broth, all raw, call it a day. That's
I mean.
No.
I eat it.
I can't. I won't.
No, I'll eat it all day.
Too. It's like
some shepherd's pie too.
I've had people that go like, "Oh, I don't like Brussels sprouts.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like Brussels sprouts." And it's because like you talk to them, it's like, "Oh, well, Brussels sprouts are boiled." Like, no. And like, here, let me sear some
broth. Brussels sprouts are disgusting.
And then,
no, they're not.
If you can cover it in cheese and bacon and it still tastes funky, it's disgusting. Brussels sprouts are disgusting.
You gotta throw in a little bit of balsamic vinegar. But
oh no!
Everybody that I've talked to, it's like, I don't like Brussels sprouts. When they've had mine, they're like, okay, I could eat Brussels sprouts.
Nope. I've tried it a million
but
different
talking
ways.
About like boiling versus like actually doing something the right way is makes a big difference.
That's true.
So you're not gonna go and boil your steak?
Oh, I mean, I've had to do that. I mean, I've done that.
To do that? Not at home, huh?
Yeah, at home.
You've boiled a steak.
For what purpose? Cook it right on your burner.
Like there was a home invasion situation.
Right?
Somebody
like
put a gun to your head.
Like,
it's like,
you boiled
a steak.
He's boiled steak.
I have boiled steak
before. There's something wrong with
that. Boiled steak.
Nick, I'm going to need you to take those headphones out.
Off of you.
Leave. You're done.
I mean,
ladies and gentlemen, Nick has been removed.
Somebody call the police.
Been removed from the building.
I've done some things over the oven that has not been
well received.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one of the reasons that there is so much drinking involved in eating on St. Patrick's Day.
Tell us, Danny. Tell us.
And it all goes back to the fact that St. Patrick's Day always takes place in Lent, and like good Irish Catholic, whatever, that you know, you're not supposed to drink during Lent, you're not supposed to have meat, but the church said that on St. Patrick's Day you could drink and you could have meat. And so you're in the middle of this dry season, this 40-day period where you're not supposed to drink or eat meat, and then you are allowed to do both. And so almost right from the start, it was a huge drinking thing.
That's interesting.
Because all of a sudden you were allowed to do that.
I mean,
and now it's just become, of course, that whole Catholic thing, nobody cares that it's Lent. Who knows that it's Lent? You see somebody on Ash Wednesday with a smudge on their head, and you're like, what did they hit? You know, nobody knows. But That's where it all started.
I know I'm crossing cultures here, but it's still Catholic. Like I come from not far from New Orleans. I've mentioned that before on the podcast.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
I'll accept Nolans, but if Nolans. You say New Orleans, I'll fight you.
I'll meet you in the parking lot, brother.
But
I'll let you get the first city.
All I need is one, Nick.
Good. That's all you're going to get.
And so you have Fat Tuesday. The origin of that, it comes from Carnival, which people, you know, think Carnival, it's fun, blah, blah. No, Carnival literally means away with the flesh. And it's like the watering down of tradition, because originally Lent was you ate beans and drink water for 40 days. Like, it wasn't just meat and alcohol went away. It was dairy. It was truly the closest you'd get to a fast without actually fasting. And so that's why Fat Tuesday is all the drinking and the very rich food, like a king cake.
Right,
and
you're getting it all in before Lent starts.
And then Lent became, like, not eating meat or drinking, but pretty much anything else was permissible.
Right.
And now it's like, I'm giving up one thing for the next 40 days.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah, they pick and choose.
But there's always, and this is not in any way a disparaging comment, but like for every rule historically that the Catholic Church has, there were all these special exemptions. And I think that motivates people through it and allows them to continue to see the actual point of that ritual.
That's the idea, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I see, maybe St. Patrick's Day is just like Mardi Gras 2.0. Mm. Like, it's the
there's a sense in which that's, yeah. that's there's comparison.
One's there, French yeah. and one's Irish, and, you know, they both specialize, I mean, different approaches, but rich food and alcohol, so it
mm-hmm.
works.
Mm-hmm. Yep. While we're at it and talking history, let's do our 724 flashback. Our 724 flashback is our weekly segment highlighting historical events brought to you by 724 Cigars. Smoke a piece of history.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a very special topic today, and I'm sure we're going to get a lot of conversation out, especially from Mr. Kaz
Uh-oh.
Over here.
Uh-oh.
On this very day, March 11th, 1969, Levi Strauss, the company that does Levi jeans, started selling bell-bottom jeans in the United States.
When they start selling apple bottom jeans.
And that became
the boots with the fur.
The yep, bell-bottom yep. the bell-bottom jean became the yeah. quintessential 1970s fashion sense thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, I am so glad that those are gone.
They're starting to come back yeah. in.
They starting are starting. Go, they are starting.
They were in when I was a kid.
History repeats itself, baby.
They were in when I was a kid. I was like there comes, in the 70s.
Yeah.
So.
It goes in waves, man.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still have any of your old bell bottoms?
No.
That's a shame.
Nope.
That would
nope.
be hilarious to mm-hmm. see Danny in some bell bottoms.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be quite
groovy.
That would
keep
be quite
staying
funny.
Staying alive.
Oh, yeah.
What fashions are you glad have gone out of style?
Ooh.
Ooh, I'm probably going to offend some
there,
people here. Why are you setting me up like this?
Are there any fashions that you are glad have gone out of style?
So everybody knows who has seen just a fleeting photo or have seen me previously on the mm-hmm. podcast. I have a very distinct style.
You do.
But
it's your style.
It's not... If it's ever fashionable, it is incidental. Like, I cultivate my own style, and if it is with the trends, fine. But if it isn't, I don't care. That being said, there are some elements that have been in vogue that you'll never see me with. Pretty much how Pat's dressed right now.
Painted on jeans.
The 1995 puffer vest.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got his own style.
Yeah. I'm just saying you won't catch me in it.
Hey.
But to each his own. So, styles that have... pretty much the baggy shoulder pad suits that you saw in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That the women used to wear?
Men, too.
Oh, yeah.
Men, too?
I mean, look at any movie or music video from the 80s. It's just big shoulder pads in the suits.
Yep.
They're really baggy. Like, I mean, I wear, like, Eurocut or tailored suits.
Mm.
No shoulder pads.
Right.
Like, it would have just not fit in at all. Like, basically, if you take the 80s as a decade, that's it. Mm-hmm. Anything that happened in the 80s.
Yeah.
Because, honestly...
Baggy pants hanging below their ass.
How I describe 90s. How I describe 80s, 90s. Though? Like, 80s. Early 90s. Yeah.
90s was the baggy 90s. Yeah.
I see the 80s, and I think it was deliberate. I think it was conscious. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that they were just completely blind to it, but I think 80s was the... In its own way, stylistically, a counterculture movement in fashion because they tried to glorify tackiness.
Yeah. I mean,
it was all about as loud
bright
and as
colors, synthetic materials.
Yep. I mean, look at all the posters for like
leather.
Budweiser
leather.
And Coors Light
and the same thing
and
like
all that and mm-hmm.
late
I mean,
60s and the 70s was the same thing. It was a revolt against the clean cut look of the 50s. Like if
yeah.
you looked at how the average man dressed in 1963 versus 1973, they couldn't be like men were always clean shaven.
Yeah.
Their hair was always high and tight.
Yep.
They were wearing suits, like it was a clean cut look.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to the same age and everything in the early 70s, and it's loose clothes, bright colors, full beard, long hair.
Yep.
And I think that the 80s
and
some
regard sideburns from hell.
Ooh.
And I think the 80s basically said, "Hey, we're going to." The 80s were a caricature of the early 60s and 50s. Like it was going back to like the that look. but in a
costume almost like way. A grunge style. All right,
yeah, like there was a caricatureness of it that, to answer your question, pretty much 1980s.
Now, before we get more into the conversation, we're about halfway through the show, so let's switch the pipe tobacco here.
Yes, okay. Please, because I'm done my bowl.
I still want to talk about this. So now,
yeah, I mean, no trends. I was the only kid in my school that didn't wear Converse or the Adidas with the three stripes. That was big. Everybody in my school had the Adidas sneakers with the three stripes.
Was that by choice
down the side.
Or was that?
I just didn't like
Adidas.
The sneakers. I was like, those are ugly, so I didn't wear them. So I'm never.
What did you wear?
I wore Vans and that brand?
Yeah.
What was that brand of skate shoes that had the little water droplet and the little fire guy?
You got me, man.
I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember.
Yes, it was something like Element. Maybe that might be it.
It was something like that.
And that was my favorite pair of sneakers. And they, I couldn't find them ever after that. So Vans I usually wore. And then I started wearing, I'm wearing boots today. I wear high heels. I wear heels. And I
love
wearing
the shoes
heels
you wore
and,
to the event.
Oh, thank you. They were pretty
Those were rad.
The shoes, I almost wore really nice heels today because I knew you were going to like them, but I didn't. I was too lazy.
Okay.
I was too lazy to, put them on. They're, the high heel version of, that light brown with the, brogue and the stitching.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was wearing heels by junior year, I think.
You did your own thing.
I did my own thing, and I always have done my own thing. So I don't really know what's ever in fashion. I just
do you.
Do
you.
I will say, and then I'll talk about the tobacco.
Yeah, sure.
But I was just scrolling online about a month or so ago, and anybody who knows who talking about in fashion things like that, I don't follow trends, but I'm vaguely aware who Anna Wintour is, the editor in chief of Vogue magazine.
Okay.
Have you watched The Devil Wears Prada? Okay.
No.
Miranda Priestly, Meryl Streep's character,
okay,
is 100% based on this woman. She is a notorious dragon lady.
Really?
And has been the editor in chief. I mean, she has a reputation for. What am I allowed to say as far as verbiage on this? I don't want to.
Don't cuss.
Okay. Well, everybody knows
no
what
cussing.
Word.
I got
everybody
trouble
knows
for that
what,
a couple times.
What word I would use to describe her. She has a reputation. She kind of
Tuesday?
Well, I wasn't going to say
little,
that.
That's a little drastic. But, I'm thinking he meant the B word.
Yeah. But she kind of revels in it. But there was she's considered to be the ultimate authority in what's in style, what's in fashion. She is the steward of fashion because she controls what's in vogue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And there was a photo of her at Paris Fashion Week, which is one of the biggest events in the fashion industry. And she was wearing this sapphire blue suit with, now it was female cut, it was with these broad peak lapels and a red shirt. And she had a red scarf. It was tucked in like a cravat. And I looked at that and I went to literally a year prior, the same month. And I found a photo of me sitting at that bar wearing the exact same color blue suit with the peak lapels, a red shirt, and a red cravat. And I sent a photo to a friend side by side. It's shit, I beat Anna Wintour by a year.
That's awesome.
Nice.
And it was an accident.
I love it.
Oh, and she had the same type of sunglasses. They were bigger because they were feminine, but same frames. I'm like, well, that's funny.
Yeah. Damn, you beat her to the punch.
I know. She has red hair, too. It was just like.
It's your claim to fame right
there,
baby.
Yeah, I need to just send her a picture of that.
Yep.
And go,
beat you.
You're late.
Yeah.
But
then she'd sue you.
So the tobacco, because that's why we're here, right?
Yep.
Are we? Are we here for that?
Speakeasy has some real spicy notes for Virginia, and that being, I think, for the most part, it's primarily red, red Virginia. I get some bitter citrus, orange peel. I get some spice notes that, not with the sweeter aspects of it, but there are things that remind me vaguely of clove. That sharpness. And then you, of course, have the Kentucky and the Turkish, which amp up that spice even more. But the Perique has a slight raisiny component there. It's subtle. And then you've got the rum that gives this undercurrent of malty, slight molasses. And I think it really brings out some of the higher, sharper notes in the whiskey.
You know what's interesting? When I smoke this and take a sip of the spot, mm-hmm. I lose almost all the spice from the whiskey.
Yeah.
It's like honey. Thank you. It's like honey.
Yeah.
But like
very smooth.
Like a stone fruity, like apple-y kind of mm-hmm. like smooth honey. But then I smoked the glass because I spied Nicholas doing that. And I go, ooh, let me give that a try. And the spice all came back to the whiskey after I smoked the glass.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it's just very interesting how the spice of the tobacco like completely negated it until I smoked it, the glass.
Speakeasy it's not spicy, but it is spicy for what it is, the type of, mm-hmm. the style of tobacco. And I can definitely see I could overpower, because Green Spot is very rich and deep, but it's not, it's rich and deep as far as like body, and you're talking about a velvetiness, but it's not, those spice elements are there, but it's all in balance. And so I could see where it'd be easy for that, from the tobacco to overpower mm-hmm. those little spice notes from the whiskey. I haven't smoked my glass. But
you need to smoke the glass.
I
just need the tobacco. Fill it up.
Wait your turn. Wait your turn.
I will.
So, I didn't smoke the glass, but I did try it with taking a puff of my pipe.
No, you're talking about the.
And before exhaling the tobacco, taking a sip of the whiskey, and then I did it in reverse order. And I think what you're describing with smoking the glass, I got a similar experience mm-hmm. doing it that way, because just doing the whiskey after taking a puff, like I didn't get as much spice as the other way around.
It was almost like, I mean, I don't want to say syrupy is a little bit too far, but like that like honey like consistency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love Green Spot because it's approachable and it's not something you have to study too hard, but it's not boring, it's not monotonous. Like I describe tobaccos and cigars and spirits in a way of like there's ultra complex, there's interesting, and then there's jeans and a t-shirt. And there's room for all three of those and occasions. And I find Green Spot is really like the sweet spot where it's always interesting and enjoyable, but it's also something that if you do want to just relax and not have to think about it too much, you're not going to miss intricacies. Like you don't have to search for them or really like they're just there.
Yeah. And it's just a more like you said approachable, affordable kind of single pot still Irish that everybody can enjoy, whereas the Redbreast gets a little bit pricey, the other spots, you know, the higher spot ages are a little bit pricey, but this one is sort of that middle ground.
It's my favorite like all occasion anytime Irish whiskey.
Yep.
Like that's how I feel about it. And the first time was it December that we all came over to your place and we had dinner? And I was like, hey, what can I bring? He's like, you can bring a bottle of something if you want. And that's all you said.
Yeah.
And so I went to a store and I was like, what do I need to bring that'll be special but not something that half the people there are going to like and half of them are just... And it's like, you know what? I'm going to buy something that I think is my favorite and I can't see anybody like disliking it.
It's so you.
And
it's my favorite. Who could dislike
well,
it?
Well, I mean, if you can't rely on your own sense of taste, what can you rely on?
True.
And so I bought a bottle of Green Spot, showed up, nobody had it. And
I'm assuming everybody loved it.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was like, at worst, some people are going to go, yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
No, everybody raved about it.
Everybody loved it.
And I was like, okay. And that is why I trust my own taste, Dan. You laughing? It's like I was validated that night.
So let's talk a little bit about the Navigator that we're all smoking now. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Navigator. So let me drop back. Speakeasy is Cornell and Deal branded.
Right.
That was Jeremy Reeves's blend.
Right.
Navigator is manufactured by Cornell and Deal, but it is Greg Pease of GLPs. It's part of his Old London series. It is a tobacco that is his recipe. That is then manufactured by Cornell and Deal, and it is his approach, as every tobacco in the Old London series, to be an homage to blends of yesteryear, to an old school navy flake. The whole theme of the Old London series is to take blends that are modern interpretations of traditional blends, but still put through old traditional production methods that were used back then. So it's basically a revision or revisiting a remix of these old styles. And it is a Virginia Flake. It has red and bright. There's it's still primarily red, but there's a lot more bright Virginia in this than there is Speakeasy. So there's a little bit more of a Speakeasy is balanced, but between specifically the Virginias and Navigator, there's more of an interplay and balance between those two Virginia varietals. Speakeasy was meant to be red forward. This is meant to be a different dynamic here. And then there is Darkfire Kentucky added in a greater measure than what's in Speakeasy. So you've got a toning down of that red Virginia spice with from the brights, which bring in more bright, sugary notes. But then you've got that smoky sharpness from the Kentucky amped up. And then it has dark rum applied to it as well, but again, in greater measure than in Speakeasy. So you're dealing with not siblings of blends, but you're talking like cousins. Both an approach to the same type of blend, but coming from very different directions.
This one's pretty damn good too, man.
Hey, don't cuss.
I was not cussing. I don't know. I think, well, for me, the Speakeasy has a little bit more going on than this one does. There's a level of complexity in the Speakeasy that this one does not have. Still damn good, but the Speakeasy just has another level of complexity that just has me hooked. And especially with this green spot, it is just fantastic.
Speakeasy, Jeremy was trying to focus on complexity with that. Whereas the traditional Navy Flake is not concerned with it. Now Greg does blend complex blends, and I'm sure you can attest that. But with a Navy Flake, no matter who is designing it, if you're talking like the original concept of the blend, it's meant to be more of a relaxed and consistent flavor because you're talking. These are guys who are traditionally they're smoking this on the deck of a ship. Well, not the deck, but on a ship. And this was one of the few pleasures they had. So it's kind of like you've got guys who drink whiskey to relax, and you've got guys who collect bottles, and like they're after this particular complexity or this. And I think that's a good distinction. Like, you're both whiskey drinkers, but you're looking for two totally different experiences. And I think that's a good way of also, like, differentiating these blends, is that you're looking for a deep, strong tobacco in Navigator. And here you're looking for something that's a little bit more intricate and my vocabulary is failing me here. There is the fact that Speakeasy is a Navy blend is because it satisfies the definition of a Navy blend with the rum and the Virginia. But it is an elevated approach to it in the sense of, hey, all it has to be is Virginia and rum, but we're going to put some things in this that change it up and make it something different. Whereas Navigator is, if you're wanting a solid, strong, rich, satisfying tobacco,
that's what you need. Like,
go with Navigator.
I mean, it's good. It's solid, like you said. It's just that one straight Virginia Perique with that rum. You kind of get that rum a little bit. If you didn't say rum, I probably wouldn't have picked it up. But you said it, and I kind of get it towards the end a little bit. But
it's, I do pick up more rum in the
And that's also because
I actually like the Navigator better.
Red Virginia, like, is a stronger flavor profile, and because you've got more bright here, which really just brings, like, just nondescript bright notes and sweetness, I think it leaves, not only is there more rum on this tobacco, but because you have that's just a nondescript bright sweetness, you leave more room for the rum to really come to the surface.
So, let's get back to the fashion discussion here.
Fashion!
Kaz talked about a fashion that he'd like to, is glad is gone, right? Are there any fashions you're glad aren't around today, Talia?
I think I'm just annoyed with fashions that are still around today.
Why won't you just die?
Like the girls with the UGG boots and the leggings and the sweaters and the long blonde hair. I'm like, there's like a million of you.
It's like clones.
How has this trend lasted 15 years? Name one other fashion trend that has lasted a decade and a half, right?
It's terrible. Like, in college, I would go to class, I'd wear nice shoes, usually heels, nice jeans, kick-ass shirt, probably a vest, spiky colored hair. Meanwhile, these chicks, all of them, either just long, straight, brown or blonde hair, sweater, leggings, UGG boots. I'm like, bitches, did you get ready? Did you get ready together in the morning? Like, what is happening right now?
She used the B word and you didn't allow me to say it. That's
oh, no.
She can get away with it.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yep.
But no, and so it's the general thing. Like, people will, I mean, I wear suits a lot, but even if I just wear, like, just
I've
normal,
never seen you wearing anything other than a suit.
I want to see you one time come in here with just a regular shirt, jeans, and sneakers, and a hat maybe. 724 hat. I want to see that happen. I want to see you wear what Sean's wearing right now. Just regular.
No, and not because there's anything
shirt,
wrong
hat,
with what. No, not because sneakers, there's anything wrong with what Sean's wearing. Exactly. It is comfortable for him. I don't feel comfortable in that.
Really?
Why?
We got to get you in a like
why
some
is
nice jeans.
Suit like your that's relaxed clothing.
The same reason flannel is Kurt's thing. Like, it's just, it is an accurate representation of me, and I feel comfortable in it.
Mm. Good for you.
But in Hoover, we definitely had to start this. I got a trophy for
that. It's just Kaz.
I get met with one of two things, like wearing a suit, and that is, oh, you look nice. And I'm like, oh, thanks. I appreciate the compliment, but I always feel like, oh, do they think I'm, like, looking for that sort of affirmation? Like, I have my own neuroticism. I get it. But then you get people who, like, give you the side eye.
Like, he's
and it's always the people,
hard.
Like, the sorority girls or their male counterparts. And I'm like,
I'm sorry you're out in pajamas and freaking
exactly,
leggings,
if that's
okay?
Like, if that's what you like wearing, like, I'm not giving them the side eye. But then when I get the side eye for doing this, it's like, wait, are you hating on me because I don't look like I rolled out of bed? Like, it seems like, and that's the current fashion. You're talking about current fashion trends you want to go away. It's like slobbiness.
Sloppy.
Why is that the cool thing?
So, and that's what I do, okay? Because I get those looks all the time. You see me strutting through Target, like I say, clicking and clacking with my high heels. My, you know, the way that I dress. You guys know how I dress usually. So I just get lots of looks like that. And I just kind of like, I eat it up. Mm-hmm. I just eat that shit up.
Relish
like,
their hatred. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's right. I look good. You don't. Don't
you know
be
why?
Jealous.
You know why they look at you that way? Oh, the guys. I can tell you why.
Oh, why?
Because they resent the fact. It attacks their masculinity because they have this feeling that makes them feel inferior. And it's like they secretly like, I would let her literally walk across my face in those heels. And like, wait, that makes me less of a man. And so they project that onto you.
Does it? Does it? Really?
Mm-hmm. No, yep. They're threatened by confident women who I'm gonna use my mulligan here to curse. Mm-hmm. Who's just a boss bitch? Like that's
everybody gets one. Swear
and if anyone
word,
wants a definition
show.
Of that,
and to me
that was Kez's
and to me that
word.
Is synonymous with a woman of quality, Talia.
Thank you. See,
if they don't scare you a little bit, you don't need to be with them.
I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, going out and dressing up and stuff like that. There's nothing wrong with that. That for me, like I did that for years in Boston when I was a concierge and wearing 3-piece suits and wearing linen suits and shoes and everything like that. I did that day in, day out for 7 years. And for me, I mean, that's cool. But you know, when I'm at home, it's wait, if I'm not in the chicken coop, it's sweatpants or
you wore that because it was a sweatshirt.
But you wore that because it was asked of you.
Yes.
It was imposed on you.
Yes.
See, I don't dress this way because honestly, my boss and people in my company, not in a mean way, but they was like, why the hell are you dressed like that? Because this is not required of me.
Right. Right.
I mean, you guys have had reps from my company and stuff.
It's not like you work for Ashton.
But
Joe, if you're listening, he didn't mean that.
But yeah, it's this is just who I am, and it works for it's my shtick, you know. And it's not a contrivance. It's you're talking about how you dressed in school and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Granted, like when I was in middle school and stuff, I had some say picking out my clothes, but like if I had picked out this sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
Like my parents would have said, no, you need to like tone it down. But I still dressed this
dapper.
Way, mm-hmm. even in seventh grade.
Dapper.
Thank you.
Dapper.
So, like, this is a genuine representation mm-hmm. of...
Let's reverse the thing now.
Mm-hmm.
What fashion trends would you like to see come back?
Men in hats.
Suits.
Men in hats
and suits. Dress like freaking Kaz, boys. Let
well,
me tell
see,
you.
I don't wear a hat.
I love the hat.
Because I can't pull off a hat. I tried. I can't pull it off. So, like, I make my hair my hat.
Mm-hmm.
But you know when men stopped wearing hats?
Why?
What, the 60s? Well, why or when?
Both. You said the 60s, but you know
yeah.
why?
No, I don't know why.
Because John F. Kennedy did not wear a hat.
Really?
Shut up.
And he and Jackie were trendsetters. They were the yeah. it couple. And so women emulated Jackie, and men emulated Jack. And that is when hats as a required piece of a put-together going out of the house ensemble died.
Wow. Oh, piece of history.
Now they're
right
coming
there.
Back. You see people with hats all the time. It's a flat cap or a true fedora, not like a trilby, but like a real quality fedora. You see those like pop up here or there. Mm-hmm. But I've tried because I love a well made hat. Like it mm-hmm. just. And they're just not only they're not me, but I've never found one that I thought like looked good on me. So I'll give you though the whole suits and like put together thing, but you'll have to give me a hat exemption.
All right, I'll give you the exemption.
You want to cover these luscious red locks?
That's what I mean. You can't cover the hair. Jeez. All right. Well, that's me. Like I love hats, but I don't wear them because
think
on.
Of how much money you'd save in hair product. If
you that's true.
Oh, I know. This is just bedhead. I just
he woke
today,
up like
it could
that.
Have been just walking outside.
It's, yeah,
the
my
wind
God, the wind.
Crazy.
I know that we're not. We don't have video with the podcast right now, but most people know me of having the pompadour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious because this like messy faux hawk mm-hmm. takes twice as long to do than the
bet.
Like the pompadour. Literally, people are like, oh, it must take you an hour to do your hair. It's like it literally took less than 5 minutes
that's
to do the pompadour.
That's why I shave, man. Oh my God, I can't stand
sure,
it.
Sure, that's why.
Yeah, I swear, man. I just can't stand it. When I had hair, it was just like, all right, because my hair is like wavy, curly. So
nappy.
If I can't, no, it's not nappy.
Whoa, Dan.
Nappy.
My hair is not nappy.
Things could be living in there.
No.
Yeah.
It's curvy. It's curly and wavy, but I just hate
snacks in my hair.
Waking up and I have to do it. And coming here, and then because I ride motorcycles, so then when I get here, I get the helmet hair, and then I got to go in the bathroom for 10 minutes, and I got to do the hair, and then I got to do it again.
Oh, you're only doing your hair when you go in the bathroom?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, I suspect it's something else.
Oh, all right.
But,
keep it going.
But, no, I get that. But, yeah, like I decided I had the pompadour for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to change, so I shaved off the beard, grew the
goatee,
devil goatee, yeah. And I wanted to do something a little different, a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And as my hair started growing out, and this started, it took about 2 months to get like things to grow back in the right place to do this. And it's like, this used to take 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. What does it take now?
On a good day?
Yeah.
Like 15. Like, I feel ridiculous. It's like, this is obnoxious. But I like it when it's completed, so I just get up a half hour earlier to
mm-hmm.
primp.
So you're willing to give
primp.
Up sleep for your hair?
Hmm?
You're willing to give up sleep?
To be fair, hair? I wasn't sleeping much. To begin with.
Okay.
To be fair.
Do you think a person who gets 8 hours sleep acts this deranged?
It depends on how much drinking they're doing, Kaz.
Hey.
What they're listening to now.
Did you look at me when you said that?
No, I did not.
Dan, I'm now, fueled
Talia,
on caffeine and spite.
Talia is one of the people, you know, you see girls color their hair a lot. And my girls do it too, you know, purple, the green, the blue, the
that's
whatever.
A woman.
You pull it off on a whole different level. Like, normally when you see someone come in with, you know, when your hair is like five different colors, you're thinking,
did you fall on a barrel of hair dye? Like, what's wrong
yeah,
with you? What
I mean,
happened?
Did you have a party with the Teletubbies and things go bad?
Yeah.
You know, and that's not, it looks professional. You look professional. And yet there's like how many different colors in your hair?
Right now?
When you get it done?
Four.
Five.
Five.
Wow.
And you just pull it off. I mean, it looks fantastic.
Thank
it
you.
Does
Thank
look good.
Because
it does look good.
Because it's put together. It's and if you disagree, please call me out. But that's a similar approach, and I agree with everything he said. Your hair is always on point.
Thank you, thank you.
But she has taken, if you take the color out of her hair, and you look at her hairstyle, it's pretty conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And people get distracted with my clothes because of the colors and the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take my palette away,
mm-hmm.
what I wear is very conservative.
It's true.
But then, like, my button-down shirt may be a snakeskin pattern, and I've got, like, striped socks and Cuban-heeled monk straps, and, like...
I mean...
If you throw in the colors...
Well, like the pocket, you know, the pocket...
Well, see, but, I mean, I could fold it like a traditional pocket square.
And it would be...
But I'd rather have it looking like black flames coming out of my pocket.
I understand what he's saying. He takes a look that could be very conservative, and he funks it up.
Yeah. He does.
But if colors and patterns. Well.
If you left the colors out and you said he was wearing a suit mm-hmm. and he had a pocket square
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
Buckled shoes, this is not what people would
no.
look. And mm-mm. it's like, oh, no. You didn't tell me he looked like a second-tier Batman villain.
Like, I mean...
this, Batman!
He's like Two-Face and the Riddler all in one.
It's amazing,
I was telling
actually.
Him earlier, I have a friend that every time I wear green, she calls me Edward. Edward Nigma.
Edward Nigma. E-Nigma.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very interesting.
Would you like to see the cravat come back?
No.
What?
Because then he wouldn't have the market on
so,
it anymore.
There are two things.
He wants to be unique.
For those of you who don't know, Kaz wears, he doesn't wear ties, he wears cravats.
Correct.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It is,
nope,
I have, there are two things, there are two things that are my signature accessory. And if they became popular and all that, I'm not a contrarian or a hipster. I would still do, because that's me. I dress like I do for me.
Right.
But my two signature things
mm-hmm.
is the cravat. And my snake stick pin.
Mm-hmm. Your Slytherin pin?
It's not... Well, I am a Slytherin, but that's not it.
Aww.
Like, that's not why I have it. But, so... No, I would not like to see it become a thing, because honestly, when something becomes a mainstream accessible thing, particularly in clothing and stuff...
Mm-hmm.
It gets ruined, and
yeah.
not in the sense of like, oh, everybody's overplayed. Doing it, I don't want to do it anymore. It's because it becomes popular.
It's the quality.
It starts
down.
Out like here at this level with anything like with clothing or whatever, and then all of these like under market things start happening, and then you can get these cheap, horrible, ugly cravats out of a Walmart bargain bin.
Right, mm-hmm. right, right.
And now like it's been... And I'm using that this is an actual term. I'm not being crass. It gets prostituted.
Yeah.
Like I was going to say bastardized.
Yeah, that's a good word, too. Like, it becomes... I mean, honestly, St. Patrick's Day in a lot of areas have become, like... It's commercialized, mm. and it's a commodity now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And...
Oh, trust me, I make a lot of money on St. Patrick's Day.
So, like, no, I wouldn't want the cravat to come back. If it did, it wouldn't change anything with me. But...
There'd be a bunch of cheap cravats out there
I would
that
hate
would annoy
to,
you.
I would hate to see it done that way, yeah.
Kaz might be the only man, slightly off topic, but not really, that I've ever complimented his outfit. Like, every time I see him.
Thank
I think
you.
I think the second I walked in the door, the first thing I said was, wow, Kaz, you look dapper.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. It's always nice to like I said, I feel like people sometimes think I do it for the affirmation or the validation. It's not it, but it's always nice to get because it's like, okay, then like
Kaz
it validates my taste.
That way.
It's like, okay,
yes.
I'm not. Tyler, the bar manager, like straight up said, what was the first day here? Were you around when he said, Kaz, I got a question for you. I'm like, what? He's like, do you have someone like that you have like
dress you.
Pick out your clothes
yeah.
like that,
a stylist?
That put this together for you? And I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And if people think it looks good or it's in style, that's an accident.
Yeah.
It's not that I try to not be, but like I get what I get because I like it.
Well, I kind of feel the same way about, you know, my kind of signature thing. If I'm dressing up, I wear bow ties.
Mm-hmm.
I don't wear the necktie. I wear the bow tie. And I tie my bow tie.
Yes.
I don't get any of these pre-tied, bow-tied, clip-on things. And, you know, there's part of me that would like to see bow ties come back. And whenever I see somebody wearing a bow tie, you know, I'll walk by, you know, and I'll, hey, man, that's awesome. Real men wear bow ties, you know. And but that's something that's been kind of unique to me.
Men wear bow ties, warlocks wear cravats.
That's one of the reasons I like the whole Petey Blinders thing. I pull out the bow tie, wear it to work, and everything like
the vest.
That.
Oh, it's the same.
The beard covered the bow tie. I didn't realize that he was having the bow tie until I was like, he's wearing a fucking bow tie.
an elaboration on that, you're talking about the clip-ons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to offend.
Are there clip-on cravats?
No. Well,
there might be.
Well, wedding cravats, yes, because it's a very difficult knot.
Yeah.
And so they're there, but they buckle under the collar, which makes me sad. But and not meaning to offend any listeners or anything, but one of the things that really make me irrationally annoyed, angry, and sad at the same time is seeing a, forgive my language, grown-ass men wearing clip-on neckties.
Yeah, that's
especially in the internet age where you can Google
how
to do any knot
video.
And it's to learn a four-in hand knot or a half Windsor is not difficult.
It's easy.
I used to
tie bow ties because when I wore suits in Boston, I used to tie my bow ties from my ties.
Yep.
Instead of getting an actual like bow tie that you would just loop in, I would do it from a regular necktie. So it would be extra thick and it would be extra presentable. Mm-hmm. And I would do that all the time.
You don't need to open a bow tie shop and call it Beantown Bow Ties.
Nope. Danny could do that.
It's the same knot as tying your shoe. People are like, tie a bow tie. It's the same knot as tying your shoe. It's a little bit different because it's under your neck. And it's different because it's flat and not like a straight ribbon most of the time. But it's the same thing. And so once I tell people that.
That being said, Dan, I once dated a girl that her ex, who was a grown-ass man, couldn't tie his own shoes.
Oh. No.
So that's not always a
that's unfortunate.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Once Velcro happened, everything just.
No, he wore lace shoes, but she had to tie his shoes for him.
No. That's just wrong.
Mm-hmm. How do you even. That's hit the road, Jack. Like,
oh, no, I literally. I said, honestly, I think his mother is like. Did him a disservice by not like forcing him, and like, yeah, it's sad and kind of pathetic that he can't. But honestly, the fact that he still didn't know how after being with you is your fault.
Yes, that is enabling in the first, like, that's gosh. Wow.
Oh boy.
I think if someone told me they didn't know how to tie their shoes, wouldn't know what to say. I would just blank face them and walk away. And just never see them again.
Blank.
If you can't do this, you clearly don't have any other life skills. Like, you might be able to toast bread, maybe. Like, it's a red flag, right?
It's a red flag. Yeah. That's, oh my God.
I know.
I'm blown away by that.
I know.
So what are the final thoughts here on the Navigator by GLP?
What does this do for the whiskey pairing that's
so
different from speakeasy.
I noticed that it didn't take away the spice this time, which is why I like it better.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't negate that spice.
No,
so
it
but it, it also it. Doesn't take away from the flavor. So like it doesn't take away any of the other notes, like the apple and the spice, like the clove, and it doesn't take away from like that oakiness.
It's definitely a better pairing.
I think it's honestly a better pairing.
Yeah.
Not if you don't like the spiciness of Irish whiskey, the Speakeasy was better because it smoothed it out, made it very, luscious almost and, like, fruity.
Luscious.
But this one, if you're an Irish whiskey gal like myself, then the Navigator I liked better.
And I would argue that Navigator, even though it's a rum, like, navy flake, the style is not too dissimilar to when I was on last March and we were talking about Irish-style plug tobaccos and stuff. Like, this is actually... in a similar, like it's strong, it's stout, but it's a consistent
flavor throughout.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that it works well. I think they both work well in their own way, but I agree with you. You've got Speakeasy is like a jalapeno, and Navigator is more
Poblano.
Yeah.
Poblano.
And
what does that mean, poblano?
It's a type of pepper.
Pepper.
A type of pepper. Okay.
Yes.
Not placebo.
No.
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 That's
not
anything. No.
Oh, Daniel.
But that being said, now that you've said that about the spice, and I started thinking, and feel free to call me out here, I think that Speakeasy would probably be a better pairing with a rye.
Mm. It might be.
No, I agree. Something that has a heavier like spice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to think of another word.
That'll stand
trying
up to
like
it.
Get into my thesaurus, but yes, that something that's got a little bit more heat
What's
to it.
What's the special word I'm looking for?
Yes.
Oh yes, spice.
I feel like I'm like, oh, I should say another word, but that's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, no, I get you.
No, so a rye or like even a higher proof mm-hmm. Irish whiskey, mm-hmm. something that has a little more body. I actually did
Maybe
try
the
it.
Blue?
I had, I
the,
had
blue
the blue
spot?
With it. So I had the blue. I haven't had it with the Navigator yet, but I did have it with the
Speakeasy.
And it was extraordinarily, like, it almost burned my tongue. Like, that spice
was,
burn of like a hot pepper on my tongue.
You're
so
also
that was,
dealing with Speakeasy. You've got Barrique, which has a slight white pepperiness with the fruity notes. Mm-hmm. You've got Izmir Turkish, which is got very sharp, almost astringent spice. Mm-hmm. And then Kentucky, which has its own like baking spice, slight peppery thing going mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. To say nothing of the primary Red Virginia on the body, which right. has some sharp notes. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, if we're comparing it to, say, cigars, and I know this isn't perfectly like comparable right. or analogous, but Speakeasy is like a Nicaraguan.
Mm-hmm. True.
Whereas Navigator, to me, is more...
I'd say Dominican.
Yeah. Yeah,
say Dominican
or
to go on that far.
Dominican, or in a general sense, a Maduro. Mm-hmm. There's depth, and there's
maybe
it depends on the
maybe.
Maduro. It depends on the Maduro.
I would have to probably go if you're talking about a Dominican Maduro. I'd probably go with an añejo, with a Fuente añejo, which is aged in cognac barrels. Mm. So you get that deep flavor and that deep sweetness in there while you're smoking. So that's what I would compare that too.
Yeah, I would
because you
like
get that in the Navigator, you get that in the Speakeasy, you don't get that.
Yeah,
you get that more deeper complexity in that Speakeasy.
Yeah, when I say Maduro, I'm not talking like a San Andres or
no. Well, but you're talking about more of that deeper, rich flavor.
Yeah, yeah. Or to even though Yvonne's not here, like I would think that a Navigator might be somewhat comparable to a Sober Mesa.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm, like yeah. that type mm-hmm. of,
I dig it. I dig it.
So
yeah, something on that end where it's got that body, but it's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
Since you brought up cigars, mm-hmm. Laudisi just announced that they had acquired Caldwell.
Caldwell.
What's that? No. We
like,
just
wait,
Caldwell
we're not
cigars.
Supposed to talk about that.
Oh,
right
oh
now?
Yeah.
No, it's
oh, yeah.
Totally public.
That entire like cigar brand that my company just acquired. No. So as of not this past Friday, but the Friday before, it became official. Caldwell Cigars has joined the Laudisi family. So on top of Peterson and Savinelli Pipes, Cornell and Deal manufactured tobaccos, which includes GLPs, mm-hmm. Samuel Gay with Hogarth, all these pipe. And pipe tobacco products. Mm-hmm. We have officially broken ground into the world of cigars as our distribution family.
Congratulations.
So it's something we've been wanting to do, but it was a matter of finding the right fit mm-hmm. and something that worked with us and like the what we had cultivated in our distribution group. And it was a happy accident. The stars aligned, everything. And so mm-hmm. we started talking with Robert. And this started at PCA last July,
mm-hmm.
and here we are. So we'll officially begin taking. Oh, today's the 11th, isn't it?
Yeah, yes,
it is. We officially began taking orders on the 8th.
Yeah.
Caldwell Cigars will be represented at Laudisi Distribution Group's PCA booth.
Nice. How is that shaking up the guys at Laudisi, which has been up until this point? I mean, Smoking Pipes, the website, has marketed cigars.
They've always had cigars
for some time,
but we've had. So
have they
smoking,
always had cigars? Or
Smoking Pipes
that...
has always had cigars.
Okay,
but historically, it was always
pipe centric.
Oh, 100%. And the cigar selection on SmokingPipes.com was decent, but around 2018, not to replace pipes, not to compete with pipes. Pipes were still going to have every bit as much of a focus and importance, but the plan was to elevate the cigar business to that same level.
Okay.
And so there has been steady but reasonably paced growth in that regard. And I would have to go back and look at numbers and stuff, but my understanding is that, I mean, there's been exponential growth since 2018 in the cigar business they do. And they're on the retail side. They're a separate company. We're under the same, like, umbrella.
Right, right.
But
this is what I'm talking about. I mean, that's all, you know, been there.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're repping these things.
Which is totally new.
That's a new thing.
Totally new.
How has that... Are you excited about it? Are you afraid about it? How does it shake things up?
Both. But we're excited about it because it's something we've wanted to do for some time. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. I mean, we love the...
It's like Taya, you know, repping all the whiskey, and then all of a sudden you throw in cheese.
But
I think she
can do it. I think she can do it.
Oh,
though.
I can sell anything.
I know you can.
Except wine. No.
Except wine.
You could sell wine.
I just don't want to.
That's fair. That's fair.
I respect that.
But you just walk in and intimidate the store owner with your shoes.
Yeah.
And just like slide a ball and it's like, you're gonna stock this, and they go, yes ma'am.
Yes ma'am. Well, Kurt always makes fun of me because he goes, I knew you were coming. I heard you from the parking lot.
it was the shoes. You didn't like get a shiver whenever I pulled into the parking lot.
That's probably really what it is. He just makes the excuse for the shoes. Mm-hmm.
The best thing that ever happened is it wasn't at Laudisi, but I pulled up to work one day and I got out of the car and I started to walk into the building, and as I was walking through the parking lot, out of nowhere, ridiculous size murder of crows like came out from the tree line and like flew over me.
Jesus.
Walked in and I was like, did y'all see that? And it's like, yeah, it didn't surprise us. We knew you were coming.
But the crows let us know.
This murder of amazing. Crows comes out, yeah.
But I mean, the only thing that would have made it better if there was just like one streak of lightning that came across the sky too. But no, we're very excited. We like the product. It was something that it just happened when it was right. We are scared, but not in a lack of confidence or wits, because Laudisi doesn't do anything that we don't have confidence that we can do well.
Okay.
And so we have that standard, but it would be hubris for the most competent of organizations or people to branch into something they haven't done previously and not have any sort of like, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a reasonable and healthy and positive sign to have that fear, because it means we're taking it seriously and we care about the brand, and we want to do the right thing, not only for our accounts that we've had, but the Caldwell accounts that we didn't previously service that are now part of our family of stores that we service. So we want to do right by everybody, and we want people to still be pleased with the product and service.
Sure, sure.
Go
ahead.
Can I just say that this is why Kaz is becoming one of my favorite people, because he just used hubris in everyday speak, and that makes me very happy.
It's because I have Dan walk around when I'm here, and he just, it's the Marcus Aurelius thing. He whispers in my ear, you are but a man. You are but a man.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't help, though, because I turn around and it's like, yes, I just thought you should see what one looks like, Dan.
That's a hell of a way to end the show.
And then I trip. And
it just rounds it out.
But, you know, I know that, you know, knowing you as well as I do, you like cigars. You smoke cigars. You know, I know that's part of your... That's part of your thing. I don't think picking up a cigar and repping a cigar for you is going to be a big thing. Are your other reps, are they along that line too, like
yourself? In varying ways, mm-hmm. but I don't have the least apprehension about any of them. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's, we all, that's the beauty of having a sales team, mm-hmm. is we all have our own strengths and weaknesses, and right. instead of being in our little chambers, like, we all talk to each other, we all... So you're a pastor. I believe it's Proverbs, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. That's what we do. It's like, we not only have scheduled monthly meetings where we go over reports and like we have those, but we are texting and talking all the time about how, hey, have you ever encountered something like this? How did you handle it?
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get together, and some of the tactics I have used on the road when I was a rep, and even now, came from one particular rep who was talking about this little thing that he did to help elucidate accounts as to like how they were leaving money on the table, or like, and without just telling them like, hey, you need to do this, like you show hard data and stuff like that. And I was like, that is a brilliant idea. And then I, in turn, and it wasn't like a deliberate exchange, but in that same conversation, I said, yeah, I did this for this shop. And he's like, that's, I've never thought about that. And it's just that collaborative team thing that just happens naturally. So anywhere that we might have a deficit in a skill, one of us is going to have a strength there, and right. vice versa. So,
and help each other out.
Yeah. So like cigars, like I can speak confidently about cigars historically in what I prefer to smoke. The types of Vitola, growing regions, types of leaf, like things like that. And then everything else, I had a good comprehension, but I couldn't speak as deeply as I could what I enjoyed. So really all the gaps in my knowledge I have to fill or deepen is just stuff that historically I didn't just learn as a hobbyist and enthusiast on my own. So I knew exactly where to go in a humidor, or like if someone said, hey, try this, it has this, this, and this, I would know, yeah, that's in my wheelhouse. So it's exciting. There's no worries about skills or the team. It's just like we want to do right by the brand, and we don't want there to be any lapse in the service that we've always, that we've become known for.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're just about at the end of the show.
I think so, Daniel.
I think we are. Kaz and Talia, thank you so much for being on.
Of course.
2 weeks Pleasure. In a row.
2 weeks.
Yep.
Woo!
You can be on whenever you want, lady. Mm-hmm. And Kaz, we're always glad to have you on the show. It's Absolutely. Always good conversation, everything.
When you can get a word in.
When I can get a word in. But no, you have lots of great things to say. That's why I let you talk. People need to know the Kaz that I know.
Are you sure? You might see a dip in listeners.
All right, everybody. That is our show for tonight. We're glad you're with us. Thanks for being with us again. And we'll see you next week on Not Just Blowing Smoke. Right?
Stay smoky, my friends.
Stay smoky, my friends.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Happy
St. Patrick's Day. Yes, drink Jameson.
And everything that you want to drink and smoke.
Jameson.
Braise that corned beef. Don't boil it.
Braise that
boil
beef.
Boil it.
Braise that beef. With the top down, smoking on a fat cigar.